7 and good night. Welcome to Sanity in an Insane World. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, and we're here to talk tonight about the Middle East and U.S. foreign policy. What can we say about the Middle East? Since Obama took office, there's been the Arab Spring. There's been a deterioration with the United States-Israeli relations, and there's been a desperate attempt by the Obama administration to reach a deal, a nuclear deal, with Iran, which was struck last week. It's such a long and complicated story, and there's so much history, and the situation is very complex. So we'll cover a few issues. The main issue in the news right now is the fact that the U.S. and Obama desperately tried to get a deal with Iran, which they reached. And, you know, the world today has become so partisan that the people on the left side of the spectrum, the political spectrum, are going to basically cheerlead and say how whatever Obama did was good. They reached a deal because you have to talk to your enemies. It's a good deal. It's better for everyone, including Israel, and they think that what they did is right. And obviously, the right and the people on the other side of the political spectrum feel that it's dangerous. He's appeasing them. They can't be trusted. They're the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, and so on and so forth. But what's really the truth as far as Iran goes? For years, Obama has been trying to reach out to Iran and make a deal with them and talk to them. I firmly believe that Obama feels that America has much to apologize for. His wife said that America is a mean country. There have been numerous examples of where he's gone around the world and said certain things that basically apologize for America. To give you a couple of examples, he was in Turkey and he said America had often been at fault and added remorse for slavery and treatment of the Native Americans. To Russia, he emphasized the need for a diplomatic reset button. To Japan, he touched on the brutal way in which America ended World War II. To the world at large, he was apologizing for Gitmo, the war on terror, and some of the CIA activities. And there are other examples, specifically his speech in Cairo, where he confessed the wrong policies and past mistake of America. There are certain other things. Now, you get the idea. And I think that he feels that he's got this cult of personality that can reach out to people and countries to get them to do what he wants. I personally think he's a very naive narcissist that thinks that by his cult of personality, he can persuade people to doing what he wants. And I think he's going to find out the hard way that the Middle East is not as naive and gullible as the American or a significant amount of the American population that voted for him. Let's go to the phone lines in a minute. But before we do, I just want to mention a couple of other things vis-a-vis this. It's interesting how people, you know, you have people that are in favor of the deal that he reached with Iran and opposed to it. It's interesting how Obama's constantly tried to reach out to Iran to work out a deal, and has constantly been criticizing and alienating Israel, specifically Netanyahu. It's very telling how he will never criticize any of the other countries in the Middle East to the same degree and the same effect as he's criticized Israel. Even after Netanyahu won, he basically said we have to reevaluate the position and the relationship with Israel. But when the Iranians were protesting in the streets for freedom and democracy years ago, he didn't seem to say anything about that. It's telling how he you know, one leader was democratically elected. Since he's not happy about it, he's got to reevaluate. The other people are putting their lives at risk so that they can have freedom, and he doesn't say a thing. This man's worldview I find to be quite scary. Let's go to the phone lines and speak to some people. Hello?
Yes, I am calling actually from Canada. My name is Mike.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm okay. What's your name?
Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
So I'm finding what you're saying to be very interesting, and I think it's a very relevant topic to what is going on in the world today. And, you know, on many of the things that you you brought up and touched on, I agree with you.
There's one other thing that I forgot to mention that I think is very important in telling, and that is how, you know, the Obama administration was so quick to reach a deal with Iran, and he's, you know, people in his camp are very excited about it, but the Arab street is not excited about it at all. In fact, Saudi Arabia has been bombing parts of Yemen where the Iranian-backed rebels or terrorists or whomever they are, the Houthis, are located, and apparently the Egyptians and the Jordanians are also very, very uncomfortable with what's going on, and the fear is there's going to be a nuclear arms escalation in the Middle East because of this. So what are your thoughts, Mike?
Look, first of all, his complete strategy in the Middle East is a complete disaster, in my opinion, since he was first elected. And you brought up the speech that he made in Cairo in 2008, apologizing for governments before him and the way that they've handled the Middle East and Muslim relations with the United States in general. He was apologizing for that, and I think that he put the United States on very weak footing from their perspective in that part of the world, and made them appear to be weak and as though they were going to change courses, which is in fact exactly what he did. And I think everything that he's done in the Middle East since then has been a disaster. I mean, most recently,
his foreign policy is a total disaster. There's no question about it. Everything.
He referred to ISIS as a JV squad. First of all, when it was first making headlines, and as we saw, he completely fumbled the ball on his way of handling that, especially when he basically spelled out his entire strategy for them, followed that to a T, and they, you know, it's not very hard to listen to the news today, and especially with the technology that we have, and if he's saying that he's not going to put boots on the ground, you're allowing your enemy to, you know, cater and tailor their strategy based on what it is that you're intending to do. And that's exactly what he did. He let them know precisely what his strategy was. And he did that, and then that failed. And then what did he have to do? He had to go back on what he originally said and increase the level of interaction that the United States is taking against ISIS. But again, he referred to them as a junior varsity squad. So just to give you an idea of how poorly his perception is of things in that region, it's incredible, really. And he's the president of the United States. Then you have Yemen, which you also just touched on. That, according to him, was a success story.
Correct.
And as you can see, it's a complete disaster, because I wouldn't refer to anything as a success story if I was the president, if I had to not only withdraw my diplomatic corps and then also my military. So,
well,
in my mind,
listen, it all depends on what you consider success.
Well, I'm pretty sure that would be a complete failure from anybody's perspective. I don't see how you could refer to that as a success.
I don't know. Did you ask Obama this question?
You want to have diplomatic relations. That is considered successful. So if you're pulling out your diplomatic corps, you're definitely not having relations.
How about Syria?
I haven't had the chance. No, unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to call Obama and ask him that question myself, but I wish somebody would.
Okay. How about Syria?
Syria is another real success story, especially considering, I don't know who's dumber, him or John Kerry. I mean,
it's a tough one.
It really is. It's incredible. I mean, but just specifically in Syria, I mean, what I really love was that they recently offered Assad a seat at the negotiating table, as if, you know, like, it's ridiculous. They wanted to oust him.
Is this the same Assad that slaughtered thousands of his own people?
It sure is. It's exactly the same Assad. You know what I find interesting, actually? Why did it take them this long to intervene? And frankly, they haven't even really intervened in Syria. Whereas when it came to Gaddafi in Libya, it took them a few days in order to start a bombing campaign. And then, you know what I loved about the situation in Libya was they said it was for humanitarian reasons. So
well, let me ask you a question.
What's lacking for me is, where's the humanitarian nature of his policies in Syria.
Listen, Mike, I think you and I are on the same page, and we can go on and on about this. I want to ask you a few questions. First of all, why is it that when the Muslim Brotherhood-backed Morsi was elected in Egypt, he called to congratulate them, and he didn't question the guy's motives or his worldview, but when Netanyahu was elected in Israel, he didn't call to congratulate him, and he had said he had to reevaluate the relationship? Like, why is it that in certain cases, why do you think, in the case of Israel, essentially what happened was, since the outcome of the election was not what he wanted, he had to basically reevaluate it. But in other situations, maybe he wanted the outcome in Egypt that they got. But or and I mentioned before about how he did nothing about the revolution in Iran when people were protesting for freedom. Why isn't it his responsibility as a leader to basically respect what the people of other countries do in terms of their elections, instead of like picking and choosing what's okay and what's not? Like, do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, yeah, I do. I mean, I would elaborate for you a little more. I'm not quite sure that I know where you're going.
No, where I'm going with this is that when Israel did something he didn't want, he had no problems criticizing and not reevaluating the relationship and not calling to congratulate Netanyahu. But when other countries,
it's funny on that point, because if you look at what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen right now, Israel's always held to a different standard. It's not only by him; it's frankly by the entire world. I mean, what's happening in Yemen right now is already almost far worse than what happened during the entire summer with Gaza, and it's only been a few days.
Yeah.
You have 74 children that are dead, 540 total that have been killed, 1,700 wounded, and 100,000 that have been displaced. And in the United Nations, you have Human Rights Council that has passed zero resolutions against Saudi Arabia.
But didn't they pass a resolution against Israel because they mistreat women? Namely Palestinian women?
Inquiries. How many inquiries have been launched against Israel by the United Nations? And, you know, Obama has frankly done nothing to prevent this from their supposed good ally in the region.
I lost track. But let me ask you a serious question, not being sarcastic. What do you think Obama's trying to accomplish with Israel? Do you think that he has like a devious, sinister plan, or you just think that this is what his worldview is and he thinks he's doing the right thing for everybody involved?
Honestly, I think he's in over his head. I really don't think he understands the region, and I don't think that he realizes all of his strategic moves thus far have been giving the upper hand to Iran. And when it comes to the current situation in Iraq, I mean, if you were listening, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, the Iranian foreign minister referred to Baghdad as the capital of Iran. So
I did not know that. I did not know.
No,
but the question, I'm asking you a question. I'm not disputing that he's in over his head, but do you think that he's doing something for like sinister reasons, or do you really think that he's doing what he thinks is the right thing, and and in your point of view and in my personal opinion, he's completely wrong and it's a total disaster?
Well, I don't know that every idiot needs to have a reason for why what they're doing. I mean, you can just be an idiot and not really know what you're doing and somehow be way in over your head, and I think that's the case with him. I mean, he seems to be somebody who has no long-term vision with respect to anything, not just his foreign policy.
I agree with you again, Mike. You and I, we should go for a beer, you and I. I hear you.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I think
should.
That, but what does it say about the U.S. population that they voted for this guy twice and they voted for Bush two times before that?
Well, you know, I mean, look, it says a lot, and it also says a lot when you look at the way that Americans are perceived the world over today. Not much has actually changed. While the average American lefty on university campus will say, well, now we're proud to be American when we travel. I'm sorry, go to the Middle East. I invite you to go to the Middle East. Pronounce the fact
that they don't
like
the Americans any more than they used to.
No, it didn't change a single thing.
I think it might even be worse.
And in fact, their bombing campaigns kill far more innocents than troops on the ground would actually be killing. So, frankly, I think it's...
Yeah, but less troops
die,
which is not a bad thing.
he's given Iraq to Iran. He's basically going to allow them to take over Syria as well. They're moving down, if you haven't noticed, into Yemen, which is exactly
I want to ask you a question, though, on that. And I want to ask you a question, and it's an important issue. Because I'm of the opinion, personally, that look, the Americans are involved in this mess, so it's not so easy just to pick up and walk out. Having said that, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. What's Obama supposed to do? What's the Americans supposed to do? Are they supposed to have a presence there forever and ever to accomplish nothing and just waste more time, money, and get more soldiers killed? I mean, look, you could make the argument that Bush went in there with no plan to, and he created this mess from the beginning, and Obama inherited, which
well,
is true.
I don't think
Obama's done anything right there, but it is Bush that started it.
I think,
pardon?
No, but I mean, really, American foreign policy with respect to the Muslim world has been...
Hello?
I don't think...
I'm sorry, Mike, you're cutting in and out. Mike, I can't hear you. Why don't you call back? I'm going to disconnect. Call back if you can hear me, okay? We lost him. All right, so we lost Mike, but I'm bringing up an interesting point. I think that Obama and obviously the last caller feels that Obama's foreign policy is an unmitigated disaster, and I agree with that. Having said that, one thing I do agree with that a lot of Americans state is, like, at what point in time does America say, you know something, we got our own problems, we have our own things that we've got to deal with, we have trillions of dollars of debt, we have a border that's not being secured, we have all kinds of other issues and things. I mean, think about how much money has been spent on the war in Iraq. I mean, they have infrastructure that needs repaired, they have debt levels, they have millions of people that aren't working. At what point do the Americans say, listen, as long as you guys aren't affecting us and you're not affecting our interests, and even if you are to a very small extent, do they basically say, guys, good luck to you, we got our own problems, and you fight this out between the two of you? I mean, the American public is getting weary of getting involved in all these conflicts all over the world, especially ones that aren't going to resolve anything and are just going to make people resent them even more. Let them deal with it themselves. Let the Sunni and the Shia deal with these issues, and let the Americans stay out of it. What the hell are the Americans going to do? The rift and the fighting between the Sunni and the Shia has been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years before America even became a country. So, I mean, it's time, I think, for America to really pick and choose where it gets involved around the world, A, and B, for the Muslim world to deal with its problems on its own. And, you know, no one likes to see poor children getting hurt or killed, and no one likes to see displaced refugees and all that. But what is the rest of the world supposed to do? How are you supposed to stop that? I mean, there's poverty in the United States. There's unemployment. We've got more than our own share of problems that we got to take care of. We can't even fix our own issues. How the hell are we going to go fix everyone else's? So, I mean, that's one thing that I do understand people on the left stating. But as far as his foreign policy goes, just to go back to that, I cannot understand what he's thinking. And in my personal opinion, I don't think that he has a sinister motive. I don't think that Obama is deliberately trying to create problems for Israel or any other country. I think that his worldview is such that he thinks he's doing the right thing and that what he's doing is going to end up being yielding the best results, just like Bush really believed in what he was doing and he felt that it was going to yield the best results. So I don't think Bush was right, and I certainly don't think Obama is right. We got a caller coming in. It might be Mike again. Let's go back to the phones. Hello, Mike. Is that you again?
Yeah, I got disconnected. Sorry about that.
No problem. No problem.
I lost my connection, but I just I caught what you were just saying. And look, coming back to foreign policy, I don't think it's sinister. I would agree with you. But it comes as no surprise. I'm surprised he's not taking more of a stance with respect to what Americans feel about him. He's going down, I just saw a poll, he's, I think, the third ranked worst president in American history by Americans.
You know what, though, honestly, those polls, I don't even listen to them anymore. It depends on what's going on in the world. It depends how people are doing in terms of their personal lives. It's all subject to debate, and you have the sad thing about the United States and much of the world is that societies are so divided, and there's so many people that there's so many different communities that have nothing in common with each other and whose worldviews and perspectives on things are so different that it's a problem. There's a significant amount of the American population that think Obama is the second coming and think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and nothing he's ever going to, it doesn't matter what he says, what he does, it'll never be his fault, and they think he's the greatest thing. So,
yeah.
On the other hand, there are people out there who think he's the second coming of the Antichrist, or he is the Antichrist, if you will, and everything he's doing is a disaster, and they can't stand him. And then there's people in the middle. So, I mean, you know,
no,
polls
see, that's
come
the thing,
out,
is
they
that,
change
I think
all
there,
the time.
Never, I don't think that there's ever been a political climate in the United States that I can remember where the two ends of the political spectrum have been so polarized. I feel like
no, I
so
think you're right. I think that it's getting progressively worse and worse and worse. The left and the right are at each other's throats. They can't get anything done. When Bush was in office, the Democrats hated him. They couldn't stand him. They couldn't wait for him to leave office. They wouldn't work with him in any way, shape, or form. They wouldn't give him the legislation on anything that he needed to pass. And the Republicans are the same way with Obama. I mean, it's become
toxic. Yeah, but I would say
toxic.
It's even worse under Obama. I mean, I don't think you had the Tea Party movement that began under Bush. I mean, this is something that, and you didn't have the Occupy Wall Street
no,
movement
but,
either.
No, but
you
know
both
what?
The right and the left that have become so extreme.
But I'll tell you something, Mike, and maybe I'm wrong. When Clinton was president, okay, maybe the times were different and so on, but when Clinton was president, yes, people on the right didn't like him, but I really don't think the divisiveness was as great. I don't think that the animosity toward from both sides of the aisle was as great. I think that that all started under Bush, and I could be wrong, but
yeah,
I think that under
you.
Bush.
I mean, I would say I'm more right leaning in general, but I definitely don't think that Clinton was a bad president.
No,
for
Clinton,
personal reasons
listen,
and on the home front,
I don't. I think that he was a good president. I think he's a scumbucket in his personal life, and I wouldn't want him dating any women that I know. Because he'll screw anything he could shake a stick at. But in terms of his presidency, he probably was a better president. And the truth is, his personal life shouldn't really matter as long as he does a good job or a better job running the country. But
right.
Look,
but then
coming
back to Obama, what would you judge or what would you say about the midterm elections that happened recently?
Well, Republicans,
they were
over
disastrous for him, and it seems to me that he could care less about his own party at this point.
Well, look, he's a lame duck president at this point. He's got no more elections to worry about, and he's going to try and do whatever he can. I mean, the sad thing for him is that he doesn't have the Senate's a Republican majority also at this point, right? It's like 51-49
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he doesn't have the Senate. He doesn't have the Congress. He's got nothing now, so he's not going to be able to do anything except try and do things through executive order, which he's been trying to do. But, you know, when he had the Senate and Congress in the first 2 years that he was elected, he did nothing. Look, politics have become very, very, very divisive, and it's a big problem. I remember when I was a kid, and Tip O'Neill was the Speaker of the House, and Ronald Reagan was president, even though they were on the opposite sides of the aisle, there was still a mutual respect and an honor among thieves to get things done. And I think the real problem is that back in those days, that the Democrats and the Republicans pretty much wanted the same things, just didn't exactly agree on how to get there and what to do to get there. And I think today the Democrats and the Republicans and the right and the left, for that matter, don't want the same things. I think the things that each side want are very, very different. And, you know, if you're trying to reach the same goal and they have a different way of getting there, you can work together. You can reach common ground. If you don't want the same goal, there's nothing to even talk about. I mean, you can take any issue, be it illegal immigration, be it foreign policy, be it spending or the wars in Iraq and so forth. It's black and white. There's absolutely no commonality. and things have gotten very toxic. It's actually quite sad because we're just ripping ourselves apart at the seams because we can't agree on anything, and it's not a good situation, and we have serious problems that need to be addressed, not just in foreign policy around the world, domestic and otherwise.
Look, most recent,
it's a sad situation, Mike.
Look, a very important situation that just unfolded that was a huge reflection in my mind of just how blind Obama is and, frankly, how divisive he's created the atmosphere in Washington to be was Netanyahu coming to Washington.
It's a tricky one because it really was a snub at Obama that Boehner invited him without even consulting the White House, to be fair.
Yes, but I mean, to be fair, the reason why Boehner has come to be the Boehner that he is because of Obama, in my mind. I mean, it's the president who's, you know, it's like you can blame the child or the parent. Who's the child and who's the parent in that relationship?
You know what? It's the chicken and egg conversation. I think that Obama's completely off base when he doesn't call Netanyahu to congratulate him and he says he has to reevaluate the relationship with Israel after Netanyahu got elected. That
right.
I think is wrong, but I can't quite blame him for being, it's a slap in his face. The way it was handled, to be fair, I can sort of understand his sentiment. I don't agree with his policies, but on that one, it's throwing mud in his eye.
Name me one other American president in the history of the United States that has had the opposing party send a letter to basically what was a terrorist state, essentially saying that they don't agree with the things that Obama's doing, and in fact that they'll be able to revoke it with the next government.
I'm sorry, say that again? I'm not following you.
The letter that was sent to the Iranian government. The letter that was sent to the Iranian government by Republicans.
Right.
Now,
what did it say again?
Essentially, it was saying that they don't agree with the way things are progressing, that a deal is not something that is in the interest of the United States, and that essentially the future, be it the next president, it's not necessarily going to guarantee that whatever deal is reached with Obama is going to be upheld.
But is that from that Republican Senator Cotton?
No, this included even McCain on it.
No, but who was the one that initiated that?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay,
but the point
but I mean, like, is that really the right thing to do? Wasn't it Nancy Pelosi that went and did things when Bush was in power and she got skewered for it because she didn't go through the proper channels, and the Republicans did the same thing now?
I don't remember that, but I don't
think
that there's ever been... No, but what I'm trying to say is look at all of these examples of the opposing parties in government disagreeing with the president. It's not just one individual. It's the entire party.
No, but
and you even
have
left-leaning Republicans, like McCain in my mind, who are completely opposed to basically everything that Obama does. So I have a feeling that when Obama keeps and continues to be the problem, that he is the problem.
I don't dispute that, but it's become a very toxic situation. Listen, Mike, we're running out of runway. I got to wrap up the show. We'll
all
speak
right.
to you next time. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm running out of time, and I want to just wrap up the show.
All right. Well, look, I really enjoyed talking, and I love the topic, so for sure I will.
No problem.
I will
no problem. We'll speak soon, and thanks for calling.
Yes.
So there you have it. There you have it. I mean, things are heading in the wrong direction, and look, Mike has his opinion. My opinion is very similar to his, and there's people who I'm sure would call up and give me the complete opposite perspective. They would basically back everything that Obama says. Listen, everyone sees things through their prism and the way they see things. The thing that scares me, apart from the foreign policy, is how divisive the society is and how we're not on the same page. We got serious problems in our society and serious problems in the world, and it's getting scarier. And we hope and pray that these things work themselves out. Perhaps Obama is right, and one day we'll look back and say he was right and we were wrong. I don't see it, but who knows. Anyhow, have a good evening, and we'll catch you next time.